The Trudeau government unveiled its latest budget this week with an emphasis on affordability and trying to appeal to younger Canadians. But along with that comes new spending and more debt. I'm Dave Breckenridge, and this is 10-3. Toronto Sun columnist Brian Lilly joins me to discuss how the government is trying to appeal to millennials and Gen Z, where the budget misses the mark, and how the fiscal plan is even getting criticism from traditionally liberal circles. Don't forget you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon Music. I'd love it if you could leave us a rating, a review, and tell your friends about the show. So Brian, it was a big day in Ottawa. This week, we saw the Trudeau government's latest budget come down, and I do want to talk about the details of the budget shortly, but, you know, heading into the budget, kind of what are the stakes for the government? What priorities are they trying to balance, or do you think they're trying to balance when they're putting together this financial outlook?
Balance is a word that doesn't really go with this budget in any way, shape, or form, but I get what you're saying. You know, what were they trying to do? Well, we saw that with the 2 weeks of announcements, and it wasn't leaks. I remember years ago, I've been covering budgets since 2000, and you know, they would be very secretive affairs. And then the Paul Martin guys got into this trick of, okay, well, for 2 weeks ahead of the budget coming out, we'll give little leaks, mostly and almost exclusively to the Globe and Mail. And that became a thing that governments did for a while. They would leak out little things, but you would never have the prime minister or a minister on the record saying what was going to be in it. This budget, the prime minister did an election campaign style tour across the country, and it was almost exclusively focused on housing. And that's because of two very real and important things, one that affects average Canadians and one that affects Justin Trudeau and the future of the Liberal Party. Or I guess it's the same thing. They just affect them in different ways. And that's the cost of housing and the fact that especially younger Canadians or anyone that isn't already in the housing market is priced out. And if you're in the housing market and you need to move, well, you know, you're kind of house rich, cash poor situation. It's the housing market in Canada has gone insane over the last little while. They wanted to do something that showed millennials and Gen Z, who I think they mentioned by name close to 20 times each. No mention of Gen X, thank you. Forgotten once again. They mentioned them about 20 times each, that this is a fairness budget for every generation. And that's what they did in the 2 weeks ahead of time as well, just talking about how they're going to try and make housing more affordable, how they're going to build 4 million homes by 2030. You know, we can have a debate about whether that's feasible. It would be about 500,000 homes a year, which is more than double what we build now in Canada. So it's highly unlikely. But it's, you know, they were clearly putting a lot of emphasis on this. As I said, housing is a very real crunch. It's a very real problem. Everybody's worried about, can their kids, can they themselves own a home? What about the grandkids? So every generation's worried about that. But for Justin Trudeau and the Liberal Party, there's a political element. And that is that when you look at most polling, that age cohort has abandoned him en masse for the Conservatives and Pierre Poilievre. This is the group that he needs to win. Right now, Justin Trudeau's best bet, and he's not even holding on to them, are people over the age of 65. He's trailing the Conservatives there. But he's trailing Conservatives massively for anyone under the age of 40.
So when you look at that, and then you look at the budget as a whole, were they successful at all in addressing those priorities?
The problem with housing is that whether you're talking municipal, provincial, or federal measures on it, and all three levels of government, different parts of the country are all working on it, they tend to be long-term programs and plans to get things done. And so Trudeau's talking about building these 4 million homes by 2030. Well, some of these programs are really only going to hit full swing by 2027, 2028. There's not enough time. So there's the realistic element. But then, you know, from a political standpoint, it's, did he convince people that things are going to get better? And for that, we're going to have to wait and see what the polling looks like. You know, is he able to bring some of those voters back over to his side? Well, if so, it's an electoral win for him, a political win for him. realistically, the things he's proposing, some of them will help, but it will take a long time to get there. And what's interesting is that a lot of what he's proposing and things in the budget, like, hey, we're going to sell surplus land and buildings to turn them into housing, or we'll make them available to turn them into housing. That's something that the Conservatives under Erin O'Toole ran on in 2021, and the Liberals mocked it as, why would we sell off assets? And they refused to do it. And then Pierre Poilievre made it a big part of his housing plan, and he's even talked about selling off CBC headquarters. And when he does his stump speeches, he makes a joke. He knows his audience doesn't like CBC. And he says, it warms the cockles of my heart that one day a family will drive up to CBC headquarters and use the key to open their new home. And the audience always cheers. But, you know, these sorts of things, they'll take a long time. But the Conservatives have been talking about them for a long time, and the Liberals have been dismissive. But now it's almost as if they've adopted all of Poilievre's housing plans, including, you know, everything was in that viral video from about 6 months ago, because they're desperate to show younger voters, especially, that they're acting on this.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at the budget, there's a lot of big numbers in there. You know, spending is up, debt and deficit up. You know, what are the kind of highlights for you in terms of the government spending, and where do you feel the budget falls short or misses the mark?
Well, most people look at the deficit, and I look at a different number. The deficit's going to be just under $40 billion this year, and it was supposed to be a little bit higher. And they played with those numbers by just moving previously announced spending further back. And they've got a fairly rosy picture of how they think the economy will do. Not super rosy. We're in a weak economy, but it's rosier than some other people have projections. This could end up going very badly for us if those projections don't come through, if the economy does sour. But the big numbers to consider are $534 billion. I did a comparison between the last Harper budget and this one. So over 9 years, spending is up. The last Harper budget was $288.9 billion. Spending's up $245 billion, or 85%. And in that same time period, the Bank of Canada says inflation's only been 26%. So we're spending way beyond the rate of inflation. We're still spending beyond the rate of inflation this year. Total government spending is up about 7.5% this year. Well, the government's bragging that inflation is down to 2.8%. Their spending is at 7.4% increase. That's going to cause problems for inflation down the road. And while there was this big focus on housing, part of what's cooling the housing market and making things less affordable are the higher interest rates from the Bank of Canada. The Bank of Canada says they won't lower interest rates until inflation's under control. Well, the government is increasing their spending dramatically by about $35 billion from last year. Well, that doesn't make the Bank of Canada's job easier. It makes it harder. So they're going to keep interest rates higher, which doesn't help the overall issue of housing. But you asked which number I look at and what stands out for me. And for the last several years, it's been public interest debt charges. And that's because we've had this huge debt, but also the Trudeau government has not managed the debt properly. Ontario has massive debt as well, and I'm giving the Ontario Finance Minister an earful at an event I saw him at the other day, telling him he spends too much and the debt's too high. He doesn't disagree, but he's dealing with what he's got. But what he did was, during COVID, when interest rates were really low, the province of Ontario refinanced all of their debt at very long, 30-year bonds at very low interest rates. The Trudeau guys didn't do that. They were rolling it over very quickly. And then when interest rates went higher, we're suddenly paying more. And so that interest payment on the debt has just been skyrocketing. This year, the budget projected will hit $54.1 billion. Just the interest payments on the debt. That is twice as much as we spend on our entire military. That is $2 billion more than the federal government sends to all the provinces and territories for healthcare. And it's exactly equal to the GST. Think about that. Every penny of the GST is now going just to pay the interest on the debt. So that's everything you buy, every service you order. That's an insane amount of debt. More than 10% of every tax dollar, all of us sent to Ottawa, goes to pay the interest on the debt. That once you go over 10%, that's considered a warning bell that you are headed towards a bad area of structural deficits and ever-increasing debt load.
We'll be right back. So when you look at the budget and you look at all of the things that you laid out for us, like what is the main concern here? Is it that, you know, the government isn't doing enough to address its spending issues? Is it that it hurts Canada's productivity? Like what should Canadians take away from this budget and whether it will do the things the government said it's going to do?
Well, what we have is a government that has a spending problem. It doesn't have a revenue problem. It has a spending problem. Revenues have gone up. They just can't keep up with the level of spending. And that's been a problem for this government from the get-go. Remember, they were elected in 2015 saying three small deficits of $10 billion a year for 3 years. They've never hit that target. They've never come close. It's always tens of billions of dollars higher. And, you know, all of this debt will eventually squeeze out things like healthcare. You know, the government says we can't cut spending. You know, when people raise the issue of you're spending too much, Justin Trudeau's answer is, so you want to cut childcare? Well, childcare is $6 billion. It's 1.3% of the budget. The debt charges are 10.5% and growing. They're going to be $65 billion next year or the year after. That squeezes out money from the programs that people actually want government to deliver. Nobody wants to send tax money to Ottawa to pay banks in New York for the money that they borrowed. They want to send tax dollars to Ottawa to get the childcare or the healthcare or the OAS or the CPP pensions, all of these things. That's what we send tax money to Ottawa for. I think there's a real issue that if they don't get the spending under control soon, that we're going to see more and more programs squeezed out. This is, you know, what happened in the 1990s, and it's going to happen again if we're not careful. And it doesn't help with the productivity. And then you've got this capital gains tax that they brought in. So it's a change. Right now, you sell an asset, you pay capital gains on 50% of it. They want to make that 66%. Well, most capital gains are purchased with after-tax dollars. So you've already paid tax on something that you saved money for, and then you invested it. Then you get the capital gain, and you've got to pay taxes on it. And right now they're saying, well, you got to pay more because you should be paying your fair share. The government's portraying this as just impacting the top 0.13% of income earners. I have not spoken to a single accountant or economist who believes that. Every single person who is a self-employed consultant, doctor, lawyer, real estate agent, tradesperson, anybody that has to save for their own retirement is freaking out about this right now. Because if you have been saving your whole life for your retirement inside your corporation or investing in land, as some of the people who've been reaching out to me have, they either have to sell everything and pay the capital gains by June 26th or whatever date they set, or face a much higher tax bill when they do retire. And there's a lot of people freaking out right now. And when you look at how the government built their budget projections, they expect to get $20 billion over 4 years from this tax change. But the biggest chunk of it is in the first 9 months of the year, because they expect that big sell-off. CEO of Shopify, which started a small company, became a big one, said this will kill productivity. The tech industry saying it's a disaster for convincing people to invest in Canada. And most business groups are saying this will shut down investment, which eventually means shutting down jobs. So it's a very political budget. It's designed to keep the NDP on side with that promise, but it's not one that's designed to grow the Canadian economy. The Chrétien Liberals went in the opposite direction 20 years ago to try and grow the economy. And guess what? It worked.
Well, you mentioned the Chrétien liberals, and I find it interesting. You touch on this in one of your recent columns. Is there's been a lot of pushback, specifically on the capital gains tax, but also just the budget in general, from people who have former ties to the Liberal Party, whether those are former Chrétien-era civil servants or even Justin Trudeau's own former finance minister, Bill Morneau. What has been their major issue with the budget and with that tax change specifically?
Two things, the spending level. So David Dodge, who was the top civil servant who worked alongside Paul Martin to balance the budget in the 90s when we were facing the same fiscal cliff, he described ahead of time, he said, I think this will be the worst budget since 1982. Well, most listeners aren't going to remember the budget of 1982, but there was another Trudeau in charge back then, Pierre, and his finance minister, Alan MacEachern. It was a budget that was heavy on spending, that killed productivity, that killed job growth, and it took years to recover from. So Dodge is worried that's going to be this. After the budget came out, he said to the Wall Street Journal, this confirms all my worst fears. Don Drummond, another top guy from that era in the finance department, went on to become TD Bank's chief economist, a professor at Queen's University, said that this idea that we have to spend all this money and have this extra debt to be fair to future generations, he said, it makes no sense. The young taxpayers now are the ones that are going to be paying for this later. It's a later tax on them. And everyone is saying that this capital gains tax is going to kill off productivity at a time when we have lower productivity in Canada. Now, for the average listener, what does that mean? It means we make less money compared to our counterparts in the United States. The American worker makes on average about $17,000 a year more than the Canadian worker doing the same thing. Why? They have higher productivity. They have more people investing. There's more investment in capital, in machinery, in equipment. And we're not doing that. We are a slower moving economy. And because they're a faster moving economy, their workers make more as well. And this is a budget that is going to slow us down, not speed us up to catch up to the Americans. So, I mean, that's why everyone should be concerned about this.
How does this shape up for the next election, do you think? Like, does this allow the Liberals to mount a strong defense against Pierre Poilievre on issues that the Conservative leader has really been campaigning strongly on for months now? Or does this still leave them handicapped?
Well, I think they'd like to go into the next election arguing over the capital gains tax because instead of the carbon tax. People are angry at the carbon tax. They think it should be gone. They don't like it. They want rid of it. They think it's making their lives more expensive, which parliamentary budget officer says absolutely it is. The capital gains tax, while I don't believe the Liberal claim that it only helps the uber wealthy, you know, think of the Monopoly man with the monocle and top hat. That's who they want you to think of. They at least have a narrative to work with. And they can try and basically, you know, going back more than a decade now, if you remember Occupy Wall Street, and that was ended up being a big movement in Canada as well. I remember speaking to a Bay Street group just after all the encampments were shut down. And I said, the encampments are gone, but the philosophy is not, and they're going to work their way into government and they're coming for you. That's what they've done here. They want to run and occupy Wall Street. This is a class warfare, populist, angry attempt to try and hang on to power. They want to campaign on class warfare and the capital gains tax in the next election, because they think it gives them a better option than the carbon tax. Whether that will hold, we'll wait and see. Like I said, look at the polling in the next little while. Next week, the week after that, does the polling change? Do the Liberals move up? Or, as some polling analysts have said, tax is a tax is a tax, and right now people think they're taxed too much. So they may not care that the government says it only affects the rich. They just think you're taking too much of all of our money. So we'll see which way it goes, but I think that's part of what the Liberals are hoping for, is that class warfare instead of carbon tax warfare election.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we'll see how this all plays out, both in debates in the House of Commons in the next couple of weeks and the election in fall of 2025. Brian, as always, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
10-3 is produced by Sean Knox, theme music by Bryce Hall. Thanks to my guest, Brian Lilly. More from him at TorontoSun.com. I'm Dave Breckenridge. Thanks for listening.